Ewell's fight was going on. They could see smoke blowing now across the top of the hill. Ewell reported that Johnson was being compelled to fall back from the trenches he had won the night before. Lee sat alone for a while, Longstreet a small way away. A slowly growing swarm of aides and other officers, reporters, foreigners, musicians began gathering a respectful distance away. A band began playing that bonny blue flag in Lee's honor. Skirmish firing broke out in the fields below Seminary Ridge. Musketry popped in patches of white smoke as the lines felt and probed. At last, Lee turned, summoned Longstreet. Longstreet came up. Lee said, "General, we will attack the center." He paused. Longstreet took a long breath. Let it go. "You will have Pickett's division, but I think you are right about the flank. Leave Hood and McClaw's where they are. I will give you Heath's division. It was not engaged yesterday. And Pender's." Longstreet nodded. "You will have three divisions. Your objective will be that clump of trees there." He pointed. The center of the Union line, the center of the ridge. The clump of trees was clear, isolated. In the center of the clump was one large tree shaped like an umbrella. Unmistakable. Longstreet nodded, listened, tried not to think. "Your attack will be preceded by massed artillery fire, a feu d'enfer. We will concentrate all our guns on that small area. When the artillery has had its effect, your charge will break the line. The rest of Hill's people will be waiting. Stuart has already gone round to the rear." Lee turned. Now the excitement was in his eyes. He leaned forward, gazing at Longstreet, hoping to strike fire. But Longstreet said nothing, stood listening, head bowed. Lee said, "Those three divisions will give you 15,000 men." Longstreet said, "Yes, sir." He stared at the ridge. He said suddenly, "Hancock is up there." Lee nodded. "Yes, that's the Second Corps." Longstreet said, "Hard on Armstead." Lee said, "You can begin at any time, but plan it well. Plan it well. We stake everything on this." "Sir," Longstreet thought, "I can't." "Sir," Longstreet said, "you are giving me two of Hill's divisions, only one of mine. Most of the troops will be Hill's. Wouldn't it be better to give the attack to Hill?" Lee shook his head. He said, "General, I want you to make this attack." Longstreet took another deep breath. Lee said, "General, I need you." Longstreet said, "Sir, with your permission." Lee waited. Longstreet spoke and did not want to look him in the face, but did. Spoke looking at the weary face, the ancient eyes, the old man who was more than father of the army, symbol of war. "Sir, I have been a soldier all my life. I have served from the ranks on up. You know my service. I have to tell you now, sir, that I believe this attack will fail. I believe that no 15,000 men ever set for battle could take that hill, sir." Lee raised a hand. Longstreet had seen the anger before, had never seen it turn toward him. It was as if Longstreet was betraying him. But Longstreet went on. "It is a distance of more than a mile, over open ground. As soon as we leave the trees, we will be under the fire of their artillery from all over the field. At the top of the hill are Hancock's boys." Lee said, "That's enough." He turned away. He called Taylor. For a long moment, Longstreet thought, "He is relieving me." But Lee was sending for someone. Longstreet thought, He should relieve me. He should give it to A.P. Hill. But he knew Hill could not take it. No one could take it. There was no one else Lee could rely on, nothing else to do. It was all set and fated like the coming of the bloody heat, the damned rising of the damned sun, and nothing to do, no way to prevent it. My weary old man, God help us, what are you doing?